You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 24th of February 2020 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at RadioAlbion.com. Well, I've got a bit of good news to actually start the podcast with today. It seems like Toby Young, who I guess you could call a right-wing commentator or a libertarian commentator who has been on the rough end of the leftist outrage mobs who have caused him to lose government postings as part of a watchdog and various other attacks on him, basically for having views that are slightly to the right of the progressive orthodoxy. Well, he's got together a free speech union, which looks pretty good to me. He says, "Free speech is the bedrock on which all our other freedoms rest, yet it is currently in greater peril than at any time since the Second World War. The Free Speech Union is a non-partisan, mass membership organisation that stands up for the free speech rights of its members. If you think there is a risk you will be penalised for exercising your legal right to free speech, whether it is in the workplace or the public square, you need the protection of the Free Speech Union. How might we protect you?" He says, "If you find yourself being targeted by a digital outrage mob on social media for having exercised your legal right to free speech, we will mobilise an army of supporters. If a petition is launched calling for you to be fired when you've done nothing other than exercise your legal right to free speech, we will organise a counter-petition. If you are no-platformed by a university, a feminist professor who challenges trans orthodoxy, for instance, we will encourage you to go to law and organise a crowdfunding campaign to pay your costs. If newspaper columnists and broadcasting pundits start attacking you for dissenting from orthodox views and opinions, we could get our allies in the media to come to your defence. If you are punished by your employer because you have exercised your lawful right to free speech, we will do our best to provide you with legal assistance." And full membership of this is £50. Students get a membership of £25. And I think there's a membership above that, which is about £250, which I guess would be for celebrities and people that are actually in the media. But I think this is a good idea. And he makes a point of saying that this is for all mavericks, basically, and that they do support all free speech. So I would hope that this did include revisionists, racial realists, ethno-nationalists. Worth joining, and I would like to see something like this taking off in America as well. This is definitely a good idea, so do check it out. So let's get into the other news of today. Now, we've been waiting quite some time over here in Britain for a report on the grooming gangs, which Sajid Javid assured us that he was going to do when he was Home Secretary. Unfortunately, Boris Johnson's government has refused to release a report on the ethnic background of grooming gangs, saying it is not in the public interest and would deprive ministers of a safe space to shape policy. So what do they mean by that? Well, what they mean is it might be disruptive for the public to learn about the ethnic background of the grooming gangs. We already know what the ethnic background of them is. We've had the Quilliam report, which said that they were 84%, I believe, Pakistani Muslims. So we know what the ethnic background is. Why Why will they not release this? Could it be because it seems like they are endorsing that fact? Well, it is basically a fact. And they say they need a safe space to shape policy. Well, I can understand that they don't want to have media pressure on them while they're shaping policy. And, I mean, this could be a positive thing when you look at it like that, because the mainstream media could be screeching about it and saying that it's racist to say that it's Pakistani Muslims that are involved in this, or South Asian Muslims. And they could be pressuring the government into not investigating the reasons for this. They could come out and say, well, there's a lot of white rapists as well. You know, you can understand that they would put the mainstream media would be putting pressure on the government. But I mean, it really can't be argued against, though, what the ethnic background is. And I guess we'll just have to wait and see what the actual policy is that they come out with. But the grooming gang's investigation was announced by Sajid Javid, the former Home Secretary, in 2018, with a pledge that he would not let cultural or political sensitivities get in the way of understanding the problem and doing something about it. And he probably has actually done that, and that's why they're not releasing it. Because if that was true, then they will have looked at the inspiration for this. They will have looked at what the Muslim rapists involved have said about this. And the interesting thing is, Tommy Robinson did an interview over the weekend in Russia. He's in Russia giving speeches on the grooming gangs. And the interviewer kept saying, well, these people aren't Muslims. They're not Muslims by the standards of other Muslims. And Tommy was bringing up these bits from the Quran and various other things. And what he really should have said is, well, they self-identify as Muslims. Regardless of the fact of if other Muslims condemn them and say, well, they're not, the people that are actually involved in these grooming gangs self-identify as Muslims. So we're shouting Allah Akbar in the courtroom of Rotherham. So if they have properly investigated this, they will have looked at the reason why the people involved in this say that this behavior is condoned by Muhammad. And that would be pretty shocking for the general public to see if they're unaware of this fact before. I think maybe they don't actually give enough credit to the general public as to what the public know about this. And if you look at the comment sections, the ones that are still there, that is, there is a lot of people are far more aware of what's really going on than they were a few years back, particularly about Islam. And obviously this report, you would hope that it's just going to tell us the facts about it. And once they know that, then, you know, they can look at these verses, they can try and get people to counter them. They can say, well, look, it is this group that is doing this, and we need to be warning our young children about this. They need to have instruction in schools telling them that they should not be going into kebab houses, for instance, if they haven't got their parents there with them. I mean, if you have a section of society which is far more likely to be carrying out this horrendous activity, then we need to be targeting the resources against that part of society. It's no good saying, oh, you're at the same risk of this happening to you from white people, because you're not, obviously. The promised transparency soon evaporated, however, with Home Office bureaucrats deciding that the report would in fact remain internal, and top-level politicians and parliamentarians representing constituencies plagued by grooming gangs questioning whether a real investigation was even carried out. And I guess this is the other side of it. It may have just been a whitewash. They may not have properly done what Sajid Javid said. But I would have thought that they did, actually, because he would have been he was wanting to show to the British people that he was not going to be favouring the Muslims. He wanted to show that he was not going to be favouring his own people because he wanted to be accepted as being even-handed. And he's always been about that. Sajid Javid has always, you know, sort of overcompensated for that and tried to appear more British than Muslim. So, you know, I would be inclined to think that he did actually try to do a proper investigation. But unless it's going to be released to the public, then, you know, we're not really going to know, are we? Attempts by the left-wing independent news website to have the report disclosed under the Freedom of Information Act have foundered, with the Home Office now led by Priti Patel insisting it is not in the public interest. Now, maybe the left-wing independent were hoping to get this release so that they could then accuse the government of being racist, maybe try and take them to court for being racist, saying that this discriminates against Asians because it says that they are far more likely to be involved in this. Don't forget, we're told that we are discriminating against blacks by saying that they're far more likely to be in prison. So it is possible that they could have been accused of race hate and inciting hate for bringing this report up. Of course, that isn't what they're doing. They're just trying to get to the facts of this. But that wouldn't stop the mainstream media from making these accusations. One of the main purposes of exemptions from the Freedom of Information Act is to protect the safe space necessary for ministers and officials to consider policy options in private without risk of premature disclosure, reads the response to the Independent from Johnson's notionally right-wing government. So when they're talking about safe space here, they're not talking about the safe space that you get at the universities where everybody has to hate white people and you can't possibly say anything positive about whites, such as it's okay to be white. What they're talking about here is a safe space away from the media spotlight so that there's no pressure put on them by the mainstream media to alter the legislation that they're hopefully going to bring in response to this. And this is why I say this may be a good thing, because the pressure from the mainstream media is definitely going to be coming from the left. It's going to be pressure on them saying, well, you can't risk any discrimination here. You can't have a risk of being seen to be picking on any particular group. This is Islamophobic, you know, all sorts of things that they could be saying. So if you wanted to be optimistic about this rather than pessimistic, you could say that, you know, it may be a good thing that they wish to look at this outside of the media glare. Disclosure would risk preempting decisions still to be made by ministers. In addition, the information could be misleading if made public and used out of context, the missive claimed. Obviously, what they're pointing to there is they're saying, oh, the right-wing groups could be using it and they'll be using it out of context. But how is it out of context to say, well, this is about the grooming gangs, this is what's happening in Britain? Basically, what they're saying there is that they don't want it to be used by nationalist organizations to gain support for nationalist organizations. And this is the same excuse that they have used all along. It's the same excuse they use in Germany. This is why they don't produce the crime figures, because they don't want the alternative for Deutschland to actually use these crime figures. I mean, how is that democratic to withhold information from the public because you're concerned that your democratic rivals might use it? I mean, that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about the alternative, the opposition to the government's, you know, policies. And they're saying, well, no, we're not going to allow you to have the information because we don't want you to benefit from it. I mean, that's not democratic, is it? In a democratic society, you hear all the voices, and that's how you reach the truth. Because you hear all the options, you look into them, and you decide which ones are closest to the truth and which ones aren't. And if there is essential information that is missing, then you're not going to come to the correct conclusion, are you? Officials also claim, somewhat dubiously, that operationally sensitive information in the requested information could threaten ongoing police investigations. Although why general information on the ethnic background of grooming gang members would jeopardise any particular operation was left unclear. Well, I would suggest that maybe the operationally sensitive information is that it is specific parts of the Muslim community. I mean, we know that it's very likely to be Pakistanis, but it may be a subsection of Pakistanis that are most likely to be doing this. And that's who the police are looking at. In which case, if that was to get out, of course, the left-wing media would be screaming racism and bias and discrimination, and it could cause problems. So, you know, again, that could be a sensible reason for not doing this. You know, I do think this is down to the left-wing media and pressure from them. In fact, I really hope that's the reason for this, more so than not wanting nationalist organisations to benefit from it. Independent research by outfits such as the counter-extremism think tank Quilliam have tended to confirm the popular perception that groomers are overwhelmingly Muslim men with roots in Islamic countries, particularly Pakistan and the South Asia region, and their victims overwhelmingly white. And this is one of the interesting things about this. I mean, in Britain, it's Pakistanis that are involved in this. In Finland, it's Somalians. In the Netherlands, it's the Moroccans. I can't recall exactly which particular group it is in France, but the fact that it's slightly differing ethnicities that are involved in the same activity in all these different countries shows that there is an overarching ideology that is behind it. It shows that it is a particular interpretation of Islam that is behind it, and that's the unpalatable truth that this investigation has probably turned up. And, of course, they are frightened to make that public. We've also got to think about the response to this from the Muslim community. And we know that the government are very worried that if the Muslim community were all to get together and start rioting, just the numbers of them would cause so many problems. They really fear the reaction from these ethnic minorities that have been imported into the country. They fear their reaction far more than they fear white people's reaction, because they know that we tend to be far more civilized and discreet and restrained than, say, somebody from Africa who is liable to riot and set fire to where they live and cause all sorts of damage. Unfortunately, that is the way that it is. They fear a backlash from ethnic minorities far more than they do a backlash from white people. Police, prosecutors, and local government were for decades extremely reluctant to confront the issue, suggesting to some victims' parents, in defiance of the law, that the groomers' underage victims had consented, or that taking action would damage community relations, or give succour to anti-immigration forces. And this is the thing, when they look at these crimes, they weigh up what is the best way to deal with this. Of course, everybody deserves justice, but if giving the individual justice is likely to cause far more crimes to happen through upsetting the community, is it better to give the individual justice, or is it better to not give the individual justice and not run the risk of many other crimes occurring? These are the sort of things that they have to think about. Of course, ideologically, the individual should always be given justice. And if we didn't have all these different ethnic minorities here, if we didn't live in a multicultural country now, that risk wouldn't be there, that there would be the risk of damaging community relations. However, even after the scandal finally broke, with official probes denouncing the inaction, although not actually punishing anyone for it, and groomers tried and imprisoned, normally for short terms, sold to the public as extravagantly punitive through creative reporting for their historic offences, the authorities are still not always forthright about the issue. And that creative reporting, what they usually do is they will add up all the sentences together and they'll say 155 years was given out for this grooming gang, an incredible amount of jail time there. And then you realise that, you know, there were 30 people involved in the grooming gang, and that's only 5 years for each of them. That's just one of the ways that they do this. Says in Scotland, for example, the police reportedly kept a grooming gang comprised of Middle Eastern and North African asylum seekers secret. This was a recent one in Glasgow, and they just kept that hushed up completely. And I guess that's what this is, one of the ways that they're trying to avoid riots breaking out on the streets between the groups, between the multicultural groups that we have in the country. They see that this is the problem with multiculturalism. One group's interests may be different to another group's interests. We don't all have the same interests. What's good for one, it may not be good for the other. The mainstream media, for its part, has gone back to largely ignoring child grooming, while the BBC in particular have a tendency to report on convictions, but only in obscure sub-region sections of its website, and typically no reference to the groomer's ethnic or religious backgrounds. Of course, that is the most important thing, because that's where you see the pattern happening. You see that there is a pattern of a particular group of people picking on another particular group of people. And in a sane world, that's what policy would be based upon. And that's where resources would be targeted. So we will just have to wait and see if this report comes out once they have actually created legislation from it. Hopefully it will. The next news story I've got today is really, really quite shocking, really quite scandalous. It really shows the level to which we have now descended. Former Mayor Pete Buttigieg advised a 9-year-old boy on how to come out as gay during a campaign town hall in Colorado on Saturday. During the question and answer period, a campaign volunteer pulled a written question out of a bowl and read it out aloud, noting that it was from Zachary, age 9. "This is a really touching question," she said. He says, "Thank you for being so brave. Would you help me tell the world I'm gay too? I want to be brave like you." "Wow," Buttigieg replied as the boy's parents rushed the boy to join Buttigieg on stage. The boy also gave Buttigieg a bracelet, which he immediately put on his wrist. "I don't think you need a lot of advice from me on bravery. You seem pretty strong," he said. "To see you, it took me a long time to figure out how to tell even my best friend that I was gay, let alone to go out there and tell the world." The crowd responded by shouting "Love is love" as the event continued, and one reporter questioned the boy after the event. He said, "I just feel inspired by Pete being openly gay and running for president at the same time, and someday I want to be like him," he said. Now, is that really the response that should be made when a 9-year-old boy says that they are homosexual? I mean, let's just remind us of what the definition of homosexual is. There are two definitions. Number one, of relating to or characterized by a tendency to direct sexual desire towards another of the same sex. Number two, relating to or involving sexual activity between persons of the same sex. So what are we saying here? Are we saying that this 9-year-old boy has been involved in sexual activity with persons of his own sex? That is child abuse. That's child abuse. How would he know what sexual desire is at 9 years old? A homosexual is somebody who engages in homosexual acts. Either this child doesn't know what he is saying, or the child has been abused. The correct response to this is ask him. What he is talking about here? Has he been abused? Has he been involved in any sexual activity with other boys his age, or with somebody who is older? And the parents, to allow their boy to do this, I mean, this boy is now a target for predatory older homosexual men who look for young boys to abuse. They are 32 times more likely to be pedophiles than straight people are. And you can see that from the number of homosexual pedophiles that there are in prison. Instead of them just making up 1% of the pedophiles in prison, like they make up 1% of homosexuals make up 1% of the population, they don't. They make up 32% of the pedophiles in prison. So they're 32 times more likely than a straight person to be involved in pedophilia. And this young boy has now been made a target for this. And this Pete Buttigieg, he's encouraging this. He's encouraging this. This is not the response. When a child tells you that they think they're homosexual, I mean, if a child was to say that, you know, they'd been having heterosexual sex at 9 years old, the police would be called in. And yet that's what's going on here. But because it's homosexual sex that's being talked about, it's homosexual acts. Apparently this is brave and courageous and wonderful, and news has been made about it. I mean, this is just a sickening indictment of the way the world is today, and the elevation of sexual deviancy to some platform high above everybody else that is heterosexual. It's the promotion of this homosexual agenda. Finally, I have one other news story that I wanted to bring you today. And this actually comes from Norway. We don't very often hear from Norway. Figures from Statistics Norway show that migrants are vastly overrepresented in crimes, with younger migrants especially involved in violent crime and abuse in Oslo. How shocking. It's not like we have ever seen anything like this happen before in any countries, have we, that migrants are vastly overrepresented in crimes? Of course, I'm being facetious there. In every country that is multicultural, it is the migrants that are vastly overrepresented in crimes, particularly non-whites, not Chinese and Orientals. They are actually underrepresented in crimes. The figures were highlighted by Progressive Party members Sylvie Listhaug and John Helgheim, who revealed that young immigrant men from Somalia commit violent crime at a rate of 419 per 1,000, compared to 34 per 1,000 for native Norwegians. So what they're saying there is that almost half of all young immigrant men from Somalia have been prosecuted for committing violent crimes. Half of them. And it's 34 out of 1,000 for native Norwegians. I mean, this is incredible. There is about 15 times more likely to be involved in violent crime than the indigenous white Norwegians. And this is the same wherever they are. All we have to do is look at Somalia to see what Somalians are like. The pair refute claims to the contrary made by NGOs, researchers and others, stating that statistics in Norway, Denmark and Sweden show that migrants are far overrepresented in violent crime, even when factors such as gender, age, social status and employment status are taken into consideration, Verdens Gang reports. So they would try and say, oh, it's another reason for this, it's their social status, or it's because they're unemployed. How come it's the same in every country then? I mean, it's the same in Britain. When you look at the David Lammy report, it tells us that I think it's something like 5 times more likely to be involved in violent crime than the white members of the population. They say the reason we are criticised is that it is troublesome for politicians, activists, researchers and commentators to be awakened by unpleasant facts when they have intensely tried to close both eyes and ears long enough, the pair wrote. The authors went on to describe the situation with migrant crime rates in Sweden, claiming that politicians and experts have accepted that one should not talk about the problems because it can be stigmatizing. See, all they're concerned about is the migrants. The politicians are just concerned about the migrants' feelings. They're not concerned about the native folk in Sweden being able to avoid these crimes happening to them. I mean, this is the thing. If you see a hazard, you should be warning people about that hazard, not worrying about the feelings of the person that created the hazard. And in actual fact, the creation of the hazard isn't the migrants themselves. The creation of the hazard is the politicians. The politicians that came up with the policy of importing people into our countries that they knew very well were violent and crime-prone. Now the situation in Sweden is completely out of control, with hundreds of car fires, hundreds of school fires, over 100 bomb attacks, open street executions, and coordinated attacks with automatic weapons, bombs, and grenades, they said. Swedish Prime Minister Stefan Löfven has rejected claims that migration has anything to do with the surge in violent gang crime sweeping his country. However, a recent report by Swedish newspaper Expressen revealed that all of the leaders of gangs committing violence in Stockholm were from migrant backgrounds. 100% of the leaders of these gangs. Stefan Löfven says, oh, it's because they're unemployed. Oh, what about the places, that the white places that have high unemployment? How come they don't have violent gangs roaming the streets executing people? The op-ed by the Progressive Party politicians also comes just under a year after Norwegian media reported that 70% of the violent crime in Oslo was committed by immigrants, who make up just 33% of the overall population. If you want to stop this crime wave, it's very simple. All you have to do is, when you arrest these violent criminals and they're from an immigrant background, you just offer them the chance to go back to the country where they came from. You say, well, instead of doing 6 months inside, you give us your passport or you give us your citizenship, we'll give you £1,000, £5,000, and we'll send you back to your country of origin. And, you know, these criminals would jump at the chance, wouldn't they? Instead of being punished in a European prison, they would be able to go back to their country of origin and they'd have a little bit of money there. I mean, that's all you would have to do, and that would cut right down on the number of violent criminals. All the ones that got caught, they would be deported. It wouldn't be stripping them of their human rights or anything like that. It would be a voluntary decision by these violent criminals to just give up their citizenship. And you could quite rightly say, well, they should just forfeit their citizenship anyway. They should do their sentence and then they should be sent back. But then we get all these accusations of going against their human rights and you can't take their citizenship away. So you have to offer them some kind of incentive to give up their citizenship. And if they were to do that rather than go to prison, there you go. You've got that incentive there. Anyway, basically this report from Norway, it shows that just like all the other countries in Europe that have now become multicultural, they are experiencing a violent crime wave, and it comes from the new arrivals that were brought in by the traitors in government. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.